Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing.
Today, we are excited to welcome Shannon Hopkins. Shannon is the Regional Vice President at BetterUp. She's a seasoned sales leader and trusted advisor, driving peak performance and aligning people strategies with business success.
With nearly 20 years in enterprise SaaS, spanning global leaders like Salesforce and high-growth startups like League and BetterUp, Shannon has worked with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500s to scaling SMBs, helping them build engaged, high-performing teams.
In 2019, Shannon faced a life-threatening illness that reshaped her perspective on work, leadership, and success. Now, she's passionate about helping others find clarity, resilience, and fulfillment, both in business and in life.
Known for her ability to foster meaningful relationships and drive real change, Shannon brings a unique blend of strategic insight and personal experience to every conversation.
Welcome to the pod, Shannon.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Excellent. So let's dive right in. As a very seasoned sales professional with a background in tech and SaaS sales, what would you say are the key skills and mindsets that make someone successful in this chosen career of yours?
Yes, great question. I love this question, and it's part of the reason why I was drawn to the work that I'm doing at BetterUp. I am a bit of a science nerd myself. I have a background in education in science, and the data that we have on the mindsets and behaviors that drive peak performance in sales and other positions across organizations is incredibly interesting. And so some of the research that we've done recently has shown actually there's kind of, I would say, two sides of the coin for what makes people successful in sales. So first, you know, it's about understanding people and solving problems. I know that many SMB leaders might not come from a sales background, but, you know, you're selling every day. So you're selling to customers, investors, or even internally at organizations. So it's about understanding your buyer and your customer's business better than they do sometimes, and anticipating their needs or their future needs. And so that comes with things like curiosity, strategic planning, and agility. Those are key mindsets that we actually measured are keys to success in sales. But then there's the other side of the coin, right? Which is the personal side for the individual, and why focusing on yourself and your own physical and mental well-being is actually a critical component of success in sales. So having the resilience, the self-compassion, you know, taking rest and being able to focus are incredibly important as well, just to have the stamina and the mental fortitude to keep pushing when, you know, the most common answer you hear in sales typically is no.
Okay. So I love that answer, because I'm just working with my coach personally on sort of like where your own self-care goes, business success flows. And she has an anecdotal theory that when I look after myself better, my business does better. And I actually think that sounded kind of woohoo, but I think she might be onto something. So We'll see. But if you've got all that demonstrated experience with it and you say that's true, then I believe it. All right. So sort of on the same topic, many SMB owners and leaders struggle with burnout. I've certainly been there. And my most famous thing I love to say is you can't work your way out of burnout, as much as we all might try. So how did facing a life-changing diagnosis shift your perspective on work-life balance? And what practical steps do you take to maintain your energy and focus? Just tell our listeners a little bit about what you've been through and what you learned from it.
Sure. Yeah. So in 2019, I was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia. So as you can imagine, that completely turns your world upside down. And, you know, things that were important to me previously became irrelevant. And it was just all about focusing on myself, my health, my family. And of course, I was so lucky to have an employer that let me do that. And also, you know, I think it's you look at people around you and you look at the individuals that work their way through something like that and come out, you know, stronger on the other side, and individuals that don't, which drew me to the work that I do at BetterUp today, and sort of to help people build that mental fortitude and resilience in order to get through tough times, which is super important in the world of work that we're in today. And I love that, Jennifer, you mentioned you're working with your coach, because that was another area that really drew me to the work that I do, is getting the ability to work with a coach and help others find their way to a coach. And one of the things that my coach has helped me to do is figure out, you know, burnout is, you know, so common, but it's not just about working hard. It's sometimes about working hard without having a purpose or, you know, alignment with your values. So I did a lot of work with my coach on understanding what my personal values were, how I show up, you know, as an individual at work and as a leader, and you know, really connecting more to my purpose, while at the same time, you know, trying to get better at creating boundaries, which is really, really difficult. And then in as far as like a practice that I do for myself, it's about taking breaks for me throughout the day. We were just talking about my dog earlier on in the conversation, and I try to find time throughout the day to go outside, to, you know, take a walk and just take a break from all the hustle and bustle of the work that I'm doing throughout the day. And I find that that's actually the time where I do my best thinking. I do my most creative thinking, my most strategic thinking, and that's where I can kind of show up better for myself and my team.
So, Shannon, I had a front seat view of you as a people leader. And amongst one of the most unique styles of people leadership, very connected, very personal, and you were an adored leader. How has this coaching that you've been receiving really changed your leadership style, or has it at all? And what kind of results are you seeing from your team as a result of that?
It's a really good question. I don't know if it's so much as changed my leadership style. I think one of the challenges sometimes, even for, you know, women in leadership roles, especially women in sales leadership roles, is we talk a lot, right, about the imposter syndrome or being able to find your voice. And I think that's one of the things that coaching has helped me to do, is really just, you know, as I talked about, connect to my own values and understand that there's a place in an organization for my leadership style, and that not everyone's leadership style looks the same, and I have to do what's true and authentic to me. Otherwise, I'm not, you know, doing right by my team, and I'm not going to get the best results. People get results in different ways. And so that's been really helpful for me, just to be grounded in my own practice and, you know, being authentic to myself so that I can show up authentic for my team.
So one thing I think that sort of does a disservice to all of us out here trying to, first of all, adapt to a new world of work where we're hybrid and maybe somewhat less accountable because we have to be self-motivated to work from home, either as business owners or employees who are remote. There doesn't seem to be a lot of open discussion about, you know, how difficult it actually is to build that resilience, sorry, or get out of burnout. Or you see a lot of highlight reel stuff on LinkedIn. My favorite posts are when somebody talks about something that they've been through that they found challenging, because you can talk about resilience all you want, but if people don't understand how to build it or that it's an actual intentional thing you have to work on, I think it's very misleading for some people who might be struggling in silence, thinking they should automatically understand how to adapt to everything that's happening in our world today. And the world has become a lot more stressful.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, one of the things that I try to stay grounded in, and you know, it can be a little cliche, but is just fo really focusing on what you can control. There's so much going on in the world, in companies, that you just can't control a lot of the time, and it's really easy to focus on that and get really, you know, disconnected or become, you know, jaded by it or whatnot. But just continuing to focus on what I can control, focusing on, you know, the challenges or the projects in front of you that motivate you, that, and, you know, you feel passionate about, are things that have, you know, really helped me just to kind of not be distracted, and find success.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I have a niece who's had cancer twice, and she says the same thing. Well, you can't control it, so why am I going to be anxious about it? And I said, it must be like a hard-won lesson for people who have struggled with their health.
Yeah, I mean, I think the period in the unknowing is the hardest. And then for me anyways, you know, once you know what you're dealing with, you can kind of create a plan and a path forward and just figure out what are the things that you can control and just focus on that every day and little steps, little by little. I also got into a practice of visualization during that time. So, in that realm, visualizing my body healing itself. But as you think about applying that into other areas of your life, visualizing, your self being successful at that project or closing the next deal or whatever it is, and kind of manifesting that in your life a little bit.
I love that. And Shannon, I want to go back to something that you said earlier, just about being a woman in tech sales. How do you see that as being different than being a man in tech sales? And are there still barriers, in your opinion, to women in leadership roles in sales?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the conversation we were having on different leadership styles, right? I think for many women, maybe their leadership style is different than what the traditional style has looked like for the men that have held these positions historically. And overwhelmingly in the rooms at the table. And so again, I think it's just about being grounded and rooted in, your own value and finding your own voice and finding that comfort to be able to, stay true to yourself and also, speak up for opportunities and negotiate for what you're worth. But I think for organizations and businesses, I think, focusing on results instead of, who the loudest voices in the room are or who, kind of shows up with the most confidence and valuing diversity of thought and encouraging, participation in discussions from a variety of people is helpful to create opportunities for women to, step up into leadership positions.
I also think that there's a unique place at the table when you are a sales leader and you are also a woman. You know, considering the fact that you're still a minority relative to most of the salespeople showing up at your clients, how do you bring some of that female energy to the table, or how does it really kind of act as an advantage to you in your practice, in your professional practice?
Yeah, I mean, I th honestly, some of the and most of the most incredible salespeople I've worked with have been women because it's about connecting to people. It's about understanding people at their core, what their motivations are, being curious about them, connecting with them on a personal level, which are all things that, women tend to be really, really great at. And especially, I think, as the world is evolving in the world of sales and technology, right, becomes so much more available as far as your customer can pretty much go and find out any information about the company or your product online. They can talk to other customers. And so the people that stand out that are able to achieve, close a deal, or create that customer relationship are the one that focuses on creating that positive buying experience for the buyer and really putting yourselves in their shoes and, focusing on what that, mental journey looks like for them in order to have to come to a conclusion of, recognize I have a problem, recognize, there's an urgency to the problem and how I'm going to navigate my way through figuring out what the right solution is to solve that problem.
I guess in the olden days, and we've all been doing this long enough to remember when being a woman in leadership meant acting like a man. And so it sounds to me like you're really leaning into some of the unique skills or unique aspects of being a woman and bringing that as a real definite advantage to the buying process. I love that. Thanks, Shannon. That's wonderful.
So, kind of on a similar vein, I think we still, it's a high pressure field that you're in. There's a lot of business leaders that still equate success with growth and revenue, but obviously you have a different perspective. What advice do you have for those leaders on defining success in a way that aligns with business goals, but also encourages personal fulfillment?
Yeah, this is so, I think, very timely right now in what's going on in the world of work, right? We're seeing companies do massive layoffs still. We're seeing organizations become much more flat. And so what you are seeing in a lot of cases are leaders maybe not being leaders anymore, right? Going back to being individual contributors or starting their own businesses. And so I think like when you're thinking about, yourself as what your career path looks like and, your perspective on success, I used to really, buy into it being all about the title and the promotion and hitting my goals. And I think, going back to our earlier conversation about having that reevaluation of my life and what defining success after going through being sick. I think for me now, it's about where can I have the most impact? Where can I find balance and fulfillment and just enjoying the process and helping others succeed? And so I think it's how can I find that role that really fits where I am in my life, where I can have the most impact, I can do something meaningful, but I can also be there for my family and enjoy things outside of work.
And how does coaching fit into that? So knowing that you're working at BetterUp, and obviously BetterUp is a coaching platform, how has that really changed your leadership style? How has it changed your sales process? You spoke a little bit about your coach, but what would you say some of the issues that can really be supported by a great coach, in your opinion? What are some of those issues that business leaders would really benefit from some coaching on?
I think there's typically an order of operations as far as how you look at yourself as a leader. And really, to lead others, you first have to show up as your best self. And so I've spent a lot of time working with my coach and different coaches, have different specialties. And I've had a variety of coaches in the past 3 or 4 years. Some have helped me focus more on my well-being and my own personal state. Some have helped me focus more on, strategic thinking and, future planning. So it's, I think a great coach can really be flexible with where you are in your journey and what you need in the moment. And I think that once you kind of get grounded in yourself and you're able to thrive as your own individual self, then that's where you're able to show up as your best self for your team and start to motivate and inspire others. It's really hard to do that and get success out of your team if you're not feeling the passion or the ability to, again, like just show up and give it your all.
So let me ask you then, what I think I hear you saying is that you should have multiple coaches. Because one of the questions that I often ask when we speak to people and they reference coaching is, how do you find a great coach? How do you find the person who's able to deliver on all of the areas? And what I'm hearing you say is, you can have multiple coaches for different things. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I mean, it's such a personal thing, and it's you would equate it to, I don't know, I would even equate it to almost finding a partner, right? Like if you find the right coach, they are that person that you're going to go to for advice on a lot of things. And so finding the right match is super important. I think what a lot of times happens to people is they go and they have an experience and it's negative, maybe with a coach. They didn't get the value out of the experience that they wanted. And they're like, oh, coaching's not for me. And then they sort of move on. And so I think just being open to trying different coaches and seeing if that individual is right, the right fit for you for where you are at this point in your journey is important. And maybe they will be helpful to you later on at a different point of your journey. But yeah, I mean, I have coaches for different things. I have coaches that help me from a communication standpoint, presentations, like I said, well-being, leadership coach and getting feedback on how to communicate with my team. And they have their own specialties and their own skill sets. So really just doing your research on and doing that internal, I think, navigation of what's important for you right now and being centered on that. And then going out into your search and finding an individual that has those skill sets is will at least set you up for a more likelihood to find a good match.
I think anyone who listens to our podcast is going to have a coach because it's definitely a very common theme. We've had coaches on. We constantly talk about coaching. I think in the last episode we recorded, we were recommending like three or four professionals that you have at your fingertips to help you survive as a business owner. And that's just what it is. And I'm sure there's a good ROI on it. You have to stay focused and healthy and mentally resilient in order to do anything in this world nowadays. I just want to change tracks a little bit because I'm personally curious. Obviously, AI is transforming the sales process substantially, and it's been incredibly rapid. I've used, various lead gen DM type services and things like that, and you get accused of being a bot and all kinds of things. But the truth is that it's very time consuming to go in. So, what practical ways can SMB leaders use AI to make their sales process more efficient without losing the human connection, building trust, and being accused of being a bot?
Yeah, I'm really curious about this too, Jennifer, because you would think coaching is the one area that you're not sure that AI is going to really, infiltrate. So tell
Right.
us, Shannon.
Well, you'd be very surprised. So I mean, as a salesperson, I use AI every single day, and it's helped me be more efficient and effective at my job. It's helped me be, get more done. And I would say, I use it in a few different ways, doing customer research. I ask for feedback on, pitch presentations, business cases. And this all helps you to improve your trust and credibility with your customers, right? It helps you to show up in those conversations with your customers, help knowing them better and making that personal connection. Because if you've done your research appropriately, you're going to be able to connect with an individual on that basis. But honestly, too, like we have, I've used coaching, even ChatGPT for, asking for role playing situations, having, practicing your customer presentation with that, with the bot. And then also just, if you're looking at as a leader doing things like trainings or refining your sales process, again, just asking for feedback, how you can improve it, thinking with your buyer lens on, if you were a customer, how would you think about this sales process? Where are ways, areas that you might get stalled in the sales process? Where are the risks in, what you're laying out? So I think it can be a really good partner and coach to you on just elevating your skills.
So recently, I saw that BetterUp has added Brené Brown, who I'm a huge fan of. And of course, Adam Grant has been associated as well. Tell us a little bit about what is new in the world of coaching and what are these professional scientists really bringing to coaching these days?
Yeah, I mean, I would also be interested in your perspective on, I think historically coaching in an organization has been used more programmatically. It's been, hey, I have a group of high potential leaders, or I have this leadership program that I'm running, and I want to tack on coaching at the end of it to reinforce those skills. I think that's great. But in this world where, budgets are more scrutinized, companies are focused more on driving performance, where we've seen really seen the shift is coaching in service of supporting the greater business goals. And so
Right.
focusing on what are those business outcomes that you're looking for, folk, and then looking at the talent populations within your organizations that are going to help you to drive those business outcomes, and then designing a coaching program that's particularly focused on those unique populations. So it might not be you're doing your nine box and then you're assigning, the top right corner to people to get coaching. Now it's like, we really need to drive this result in an organization, and we feel these people cannot fail. And so we're going to support them in order to be able to, ensure their success.
And so, Shannon, how does that actually also help doing a better job at hiring?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to, again, having access to data and seeing, being able to compare populations that are being coached versus not coached, and looking at individuals that are having better performance in an organization, and then looking at those mindsets and skill sets that those top performers have, and then going out and hiring for those mindsets and skill sets that they have. And sometimes they're really different than what you would expect, right? Like sales, for example, like you would think, you're looking at someone who has drive or, communication. But I talked about earlier, actually, some of the top sales performers that we're seeing are people who have a high level of self-compassion. They're able to pick themselves up off the ground when things don't go their way, and then they get up and they try it again, right? So I think the what it takes to be successful, particularly in sales, is always evolving, and just keeping your finger on the pulse of like what the, how that's showing up in your population is key.
I think one of the greatest challenges that both Jennifer and I see in our businesses are leaders who are in organizations that are scaling or going through massive change, and sometimes the leaders aren't able to get to the other side of it. So, how would coaching really help to support that? Or, and when is the right time? So you're working in a startup, or you're working in a small or medium-sized business, they're going through an acquisition, or the plan is to eventually either exit, PE firm is coming in, VC backed, whatever the case may be. When is the right time to bring in coaching, knowing that you're eventually going to need to transition to a reality that isn't currently the reality of the business?
Oh, it's such an interesting question. I think for the first part around how can coaching help individuals get through that kind of change? I mean, we're seeing it too, and a lot of the data that we're going through is that the skills that are needed for leaders today are, I don't know, maybe what would have been considered soft skills back in the day, but it's things like cognitive agility, it's things like, strategic planning, it's things like communication, alignment. And so that's important to be able to just identify what who are those leaders in your organization that you think are going to be able to make it through. And then for the individual themselves, I would say helping individuals like really take that 30,000 foot view on what's going on in the business and helping them pull themselves out of their own, what's going on for them as an individual and looking at the bigger picture. And, we talk a lot too about the future-minded leader. So focusing on that like future direction and where the organization is going and how can you align your skills and your team to be set up for that success in the future.
Now, I want to go back to AI because one of the greatest challenges in HR today, or what I'm speaking to HR leaders about, is we're ultimately hiring, performance managing, and helping people to bring their best to work in an environment that we haven't yet defined. So AI is changing the game. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. How do we assess talent today? And I'll go back and I'll say, traditionally we used to say behavioral-based interviewing was one of the best ways to really assess talent. Talking about that nine box, even with that very unclear definition of what it means to have high potential. How is BetterUp really kind of scientifically backing some of those questions that need to be answered that are really going to help organizations to be successful in a future that is continuing to redefine itself?
It's really interesting. I know there's a lot of conversation around like skills-based hiring or skills-based training. And one of the things I think that is, everybody we keep needs to keep in mind is that, as you're talking about with AI, all of these skills that we're building in people are going to be obsolete likely in 12 to 18 months. And so it's not just about building those, hard skills, which, are important, but, I've been focusing and doing a lot of research on meta skills. And, what are those individual human skills that stand the test of time that help you to maintain high performance in a uncertain and ever-changing environment and help employees to navigate change more effectively. So at BetterUp, one of our chief innovation officer wrote a book with the father of positive psychology, Dr. Martin Seligman, called Tomorrow Mind. And in that, they talk about this PRISM framework. So sort of like the PERMA framework of Dr. Martin Seligman, but talking about, as I talked about, having that perspective, so having that foresight to see what's coming in the future and preparing for that. Resilience, as we've talked about, innovation, so finding new and surprising solutions for things. And then two other elements, which we kind of talked about the flip side of the personal side, which is the social connection, building trust internally with colleagues and customers, and then also mattering, knowing that you're, what you are bringing to work every day, your abilities, your contributions, are valued within the organization.
I think I just want to selfishly go back to a word that you said a few minutes ago, which was self-compassion. And I have none. I think Kim probably has none either. And we're blaming our parents for that quite solidly. And I know you're both probably more knowledgeable on this than I am. So where are we with the generations in terms of self-compassion? Because if you grew up in the 80s, like Kim was getting kicked out in snowstorms with soup ladles to play with to entertain herself. And similar. I suspect that everyone thinks the younger generations have more, but maybe they don't. It's just sort of manifested differently. I'm just really curious where you both think we are on that.
That's such an interesting question. Because, yeah, I can totally relate to why we would think that the younger generations have more self-compassion. I think if you're managing that generation, you're hearing things that they, maybe they're a little bit more in tune from what they need as an individual from a leader, right? So understanding themselves a little bit more. But then there's also cases where failure really, impacts them dramatically. They haven't really maybe experienced that as much in their career. I think we do see in a lot of the data that self-compassion just more generally as a population is declining a lot. And I would probably relate that to the decline in social connection that we've had. We're not, a lot of people aren't going into the office. I had dinner with two girlfriends last night that I'm very close friends with. I hadn't seen one in 2 years, and that really takes a toll on your self-compassion. If you're just sitting in your own self and your own thoughts all day, you're not able to have those conversations and relate to others about what they're experiencing and what they're going through and see that you're not alone.
Scary. Fascinating. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the segment of our show that we get to some questions we ask each of our guests. Jennifer, do you want to ask the first question? Sure. Based on everything we've just talked about, what's the one thing you believe small businesses can do today to change the game for their people?
A great question. I would say, listen. I have said this before. It's something that I deeply connect with, but I did read a book or I read an article that talked about the old CEO from SurveyMonkey, and he talked about his practice of how he ran the business, which was he had one or two meetings a week with his head of product and his head of sales, but the rest of the time he spent on in the trenches, right? With the people on the front lines, with his customers. And so I think your customers and the people on your front line know what's going on in your business probably better than you do sometimes. And just listening to them, listening to their feedback, listening to what customers are saying, what your people are hearing from customers, and taking that advice and feedback and building that into your strategic planning going forward.
I hate to say it, but I honestly think Kim and I almost wouldn't have jobs if leaders would just listen and say thank you.
Totally.
Like, it's
Appreciation goes a long way.
so obvious and yet so
Actually,
difficult.
we wouldn't have jobs if leaders were just able to communicate truth, right? Like difficult messages is 99% of what we deal with, is delivering difficult messages and doing it in a way that is empathic, supportive, but honest. Like honesty is hard.
After listening to them and then say thank you. And then that's it. You're also the CHRO. You're done. So crazy how difficult people find it.
Yeah, I think too, one thing if from a senior leadership team perspective is the more transparent you can be. I think sometimes, at that level, you're the maybe the strategy or the future is uncertain. And so when you don't have that level of transparency and communication of like, hey, we don't know everything, we don't know where we're going, but here's the best information we can give you about why we're making these decisions. I think that helps your leaders. To Kim, your point of being able to tell the truth. Because I think a lot of times if you're not able to share that level of detail, your people will know and their spidey senses will go up and they'll think there's something they're not telling me, right? And so as transparent as you can be is helpful.
But that's very new. That is very new thinking, is coming out and saying, we're going to figure it out. And I think the comma and the next part of that sentence needs to be, and we're going to continue to communicate with you as we do, or we're going to continue to involve you as we do. Transparency is fantastic. And being able to admit that you don't know everything, but also committing to being open, honest, and continuing to evolve with that level of communication, I think is that's the key. We
Yeah,
just put ourselves in place.
and where you can involve them in the process, right?
Sure. Okay, Shannon, we do some rapid fire. So we've got a couple questions for you. We're going to start with, what was your first job?
I mean, like real job where I got an actual paycheck.
No. The first one.
I mean, the classic babysitting.
Fair.
Taking care of other humans, which seems to have found its way into being a leader in my future career. And then after that, it was McDonald's.
I love that.
I worked there for 5 years. I will
Whoa.
say you want to learn work ethic, you want to learn customer service, you want to learn, resilience. That is a definite place to learn all those things.
I love it. I always, when I see McDonald's on a resume, I always ask questions about their leadership training and the development programs. Did you experience that while you were there? Was it really the great
Yeah.
experience that I've imagined it to be?
I mean, I will say they are lights out on creating those like SOPs and processes and efficiency. My husband and I laugh a lot of the time, like my favorite word is efficiency. And maybe thinking back, maybe that's where it was born
Yeah.
out of. But just, running the assembly line and getting it done and in, a quick amount of time with customer satisfaction, super important.
All right, best job.
Working with Kim.
Oh, stop it. Fucking up.
No, I mean, I would say, I think, yeah, my time working at League was incredibly formative for me. I think it was, I was entrusted to do and try a lot of things and build things. I would say it was very collaborative environment. The culture there was about learning and growing. And that social connection piece was really key for me there too. And of course the like purpose, doing something that you're, feeling good about showing up to work every day and doing good work in the world. I think that really set me on the impetus of finding companies that align with that for me. And of course, as what I went through with my illness, that what led me to my next job at BetterUp, where I feel like I'm also doing that in the world. Yeah, I think I grew some very incredible teams there that I still am friends with and cherish those relationships.
Biggest mess up at work.
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't think I like regret anything. Like, yeah, maybe I didn't, have the best presentation or, hit the nail on the head from a business case that I was creating or, conversation I was having with my executives or other executives. But I think it's all about perspective on that and as far as taking it as a learning experience and growing experience. Yeah, I don't know if I can really pinpoint anything.
Best learning.
Best learning. I would say the we've talked about it. The learning of just being yourself and being authentic is valuable, and it will allow you to show up in better ways and have better results in organizations if you're really aligning with yourself and your values and the roles that you create.
And last one, quickest quit.
I am not a quitter.
I'd say not.
For better or for worse. Look, I was at McDonald's for 5 years. I was at Salesforce for 7. Like every company I've been at for at least 5 years or more, I don't quit things, and maybe that's something that I need to work on. But I got maybe that speaks to the resilience of just and the self-compassion of just I like to solve problems. I like messy situations and trying to fix them. So.
Well, thank you so much for coming and joining us. And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you love this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.